Hello, this is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And, I'm just kind of ruminating as we don't get to go out much and do a hell of a lot right now that we've been doing this for a while, Coach. How you doing?
I'm good. Staying healthy, staying away from people with coronavirus, wearing my mask when I'm outside. Following the guidelines.
Well, that's good. That's good. And may you be safe, happy, and healthy for a long time to come. We have...
I've already booked my next my next visit to Salem Hospital for next year, you know.
Okay. I hope that's routine. Oh, Lordy. Well, tonight we're going to be checking in with the Newburyport High School Director of Athletics, Kyle Hodson. Some good stuff going on at Newburyport High School, despite all the madness that's out there. We'll be checking in with the Moynihan Lumber Student Athlete of the Month Award on the male side, Sebastian Gilligan. He is a cross-country senior captain at Masconomet. And we'll be also talking with sports historian and golf writer Gary Larrabee, probably focusing on the Masters, but maybe talking a little bit about the late, great Tommy Heinsohn. Lynn Idem's sports editor, Mike Alonji, will be along as well. We'll talk about Lynn High School sports and see what's going on there. And we'll finish it up with sports journalist Mike Grenier, who will talk a little bit about his knowing Tommy Heinsohn so well, but also the passing of a North Shore sports legend, the great Larry McIntyre, who passed away. And Larry, of course, was a longtime official and organizer of sports in Salem and on the North Shore, and so much more. And Mike will talk about him, as will others as well. So a lot to cover here tonight, Coach. And where would you like to start?
Well, I think you have to start with the locally with the Patriots' big win against the Ravens last night. It was their best game of the season. It was well balanced offensively. It was a stellar response on defense. They held the top rushing team in the league way below average. There was the first time this year that Baltimore was kept below 20 points. They rose up and met the challenge. They made play after play. They made stop after stop. And, there's always a few dicey moments, but they showed up and they played like true Patriots. You know, they played a lot like the guys that we used to know. When they were such a dominant team, making big plays when they had to make big plays, and that's what this team seemed to do last night.
I think that one thing might have gone under the radar was the significance of Lawrence Guy playing yesterday on defense, because it, I think for a little bit anyway, it enabled the defensive backs to have a little bit better game than they had been having, and of course the weather that made a difference too.
Well, you know, as they say, both teams that play in it, as a team that adjusts best to it, is the team that will come out on top. Certainly, Baltimore is a dangerous team. They've got the reigning league MVP at quarterback. They've got talented wide receivers. They've got outstanding running game. And Belichick managed to scheme it up that they were able to negate a lot of those aspects of the Baltimore game plan. Harbaugh is 0-6 against the Patriots in regular season. He, his best bet is to get to the playoffs where he's 2-2.
Yeah. How do you figure, this is sports, Tim, how do you figure this? Nick Folk, a week ago, or last Monday, he hits a 51-yarder with no time left on the clock and nails it to win the game under incredible, conditions, incredible pressure. And then last night he misses a point after. I mean, how do you figure that?
I know, yeah. Well, the conditions were a little bit different, but even still, I mean, to shank it the way he did, to overswing the leg, it's like watching one of my tee shots where I don't come from front to back and drive the clubhead straight down the fairway. You know, I'm coming across like I'm trying to hit the inside pitch. And my buddy used to call me Deerslayer because I used to drive so many golf balls on a line into the woods to my left.
Okay, you got to save that for Gary. That we were talking football here a second ago.
But what I'm saying is, you know, in terms of, you know, he just pulled through it.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, you get it in your mind, okay, I'm going to have to pull this a little bit to the left because the wind is coming from the left and it'll blow it through. And you do that, and the wind dies down, and it just literally goes straight for the way you want it to hit it.
It's maddening, but you're right. It ain't all that easy, and if you think it is, go try it yourself, right?
Exactly.
You know it. Oh, man. Okay, we're going to take a break here early, Tim, and then we're going to see if we can get a hold of Kyle Hodson, who is the amiable sports, athletics director up at Newburyport High School. They've had a really good fall season up to this point, so we'll check in with him. And again, this is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night, and we will take our first break and be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back now, and I'm very happy to be joined once again by the Newburyport Athletics Director, Kyle Hodson. And Kyle, haven't talked with you since spring. How you doing?
I'm doing great. We just had a fall season, so I'm much happier now than I was last spring, the last time we talked.
All right. Tim's with us here, too, Tim Kearns. Kyle, when we talked in the springtime, you had the captains on and stuff, and you know, they didn't get to play, but they were recognized, and so much has transpired since then. And, you know, it first looked like there wasn't going to be a season, and then there is a season, and some of the schools have had to take a little bit of a break here and there. But all in all, what's your assessment of how things have gone this fall?
Well, we've been very fortunate in the Cape Ann League. We had an approach that we had the buy-in from our principals and superintendents, and the modifications and put in place by the MIAA. We took it a step further with our protocols for how we conducted our events. And, you know, we were very fortunate to play almost full seasons for every team in every sport. We did have a couple of setbacks in certain communities, you know, that may have had to miss a game or two. But our goal going into it was to be able to practice and to be able to play games, and that's what we did. And we actually even had league champions, and we had league all-stars. So it's pretty close to playing the real thing, the regular season, without the MIA tournament. And, you know, we played 10 games as opposed to 18 games in most sports. But we were playing soccer and field hockey and everything right into November. So it felt good for the kids, and we were able to recognize our seniors with senior activities. So, you know, just comparing to the spring, we're really fortunate, and we're looking forward to the winter.
I want to get to the individual teams in a second here, Kyle, but first, tell me about the emotion, the attitude that that the kids, coaches, and parents have had during this, because it's not normal. It is great to see your kid out there, but it's still not normal when you got to watch from, you know, 100 feet away or whatever it might be on the one hand. But on the other hand, they're playing, and it is high school sports, and for the seniors especially, man, this is their last shot. What has it been like emotionally for parents, players, coaches?
Well, I will say that first day of tryouts when the teams were together and we had small groups and players were spread out, and people were just so, I mean, everyone's wearing masks, but you can tell that they're smiling and that they're happy to be out there, and they're happy to be with coaches again, and they're happy to be with teammates and competing. And that's how we started our preseason. And then, you know, once the games came, we had that same approach. So the players and the coaches didn't see much of a difference. The parents, you know, they weren't allowed in our venues, for the first 2 weeks. So I know that was difficult for them. But I know I can just speak to the Newburyport parents who were fantastic throughout the whole process. They understood that it was about the kids and it was about them playing. But then we were able to, you know, we really want to make sure we could run these events safely with the focus on the game before we let spectators in. So then we let home fans in only. So at least people could watch, you know, maybe half of the season, half of the games. And then our last boys soccer game, we let the Linfield fans in also because it had some league, championship ramifications. So, but people were very respectful of, you know, the safety protocols in place and, just the sportsmanship by the participants and the spectators, and everybody was just fantastic this year.
Has it been safe up to this point?
It has been. We have, I'm going to knock on wood here, we haven't had issues with our sports teams, with the protocols that we're following. We have had issues, like some communities, where people maybe bring something from the outside into our team setting. But what we're doing, what the coaches have done, with disinfecting and keeping kids away and small group activities, and making sure we're doing what we're supposed to on the bus and so forth has been excellent. It's proven that it works. At least being outdoors, it worked, and we didn't have issues within our athletic program. So the kids, the coaches, everybody deserves a lot of credit for that.
All right, well, brag about your season and your teams.
Well, we had a pretty good year. I'll start with our boys soccer team. They won their first ever Cape Ann League Kinney Division Championship, and they finished 7-1-2, and it was really a strong competitive league. Linfield was 7-1-2 also, and well, Threading was 7-1-2, so it was very good balance. But we had probably our best team and our best season, and we felt that maybe we could have competed at the regional level as well. So we were disappointed that we didn't have the MIA tournament, but I was happy for the kids to get recognized there. So that's their first one ever. Our field hockey team also won the Kinney Division Championship. They haven't won since 2011. So they finished 8-2. Really good season for Coach Jess Lacey, and her crew. Sean Blue is our boys soccer coach as well. And our golf team finished 10-0, showed a lot of depth when they had some kids out towards the end. And they haven't won in 3 years. So, those were our three champions, but we also had boys cross country and girls cross country both finish 5-1. And
wow.
Interestingly, the boys cross country team, if you know how they keep scoring cross country, the low score wins. Our only loss was to Triton by a score of 29-28.
Oh, so man.
You couldn't get any closer.
Yeah.
And that determined the league champion. And the girls cross country had a pretty dominating season as well. They lost, their only loss was to Pentucket, who was the champ. And our girls soccer team had a strong year, finished third, finished 4-3-3, very competitive right down to the end. So, you know, that's what we had, and we were competitive across the board. Our participation numbers were higher than they've ever been. We had four boys soccer teams and, you know, with almost 90 kids. Girls soccer had almost 80 kids. Cross country had over 100. Field hockey had almost 40. So numbers were really high. You know, the sports that we didn't have in the traditional fall season, volleyball and football, will be pushed to that wedge season, the fall two season, which is basically March and April. And we're confident that that's going to happen with the success of the fall and with the hopefully the approval of the winter sports that's going on as we speak with the sport committees and the sports medicine committees meeting tonight. So we're hoping to have answers here in the next few days about our winter seasons.
Tim, any questions for Kyle?
Coach, were there any cases of COVID that had occurred during the season, or did you guys manage to stay virus-free?
Yeah, we had no cases on our teams. We did not have to shut down. We did not have to quarantine. So we were very fortunate. You know, like every school, every district, there are cases that happen in the community and maybe in a school building. But the way that we're approaching it, we haven't had a spread in the school, and we haven't had anything with our athletic teams. And, you know, as you know, that can happen very easily. But we were very fortunate. People did what they were asked to do, and you know, we're hoping that we can carry that into the winter.
As a result of that, have you been contacted by other ADs and other administration officials to get some hints on what you guys did so well to avoid that?
Well, I don't think we're doing anything differently than other people. And as a Cape Ann League, we speak daily as athletic directors, and a lot of things that we're doing is consistent with everyone else. And a lot of it's luck. The bottom line is, if we're trying to keep what we can control, keep control of that. And it's the outside forces, it's the people that bring it into our community or into our setting that is the issue. But we were lucky to avoid that this fall.
Kyle, my final question is, as a parent, as an educator, as a coach, as the athletic director, this has been particularly challenging. And with kids at home, remote learning, hybrid learning, and then going out to practice afterwards, it's very daunting in trying to keep all those balls in the air at the same time. And I think just as a layperson, the COVID fatigue is setting in. Have you talked about that, or are there plans in place to combat that, as it looks like the vaccines are getting ready, but they're not going to really have a positive effect for a while to come yet? Have you gotten to the point where you've ended one season, getting ready for the next season, where you got to tell the kids, okay, we have to continue to do this? I mean, you know what I'm trying to ask.
Sure. Yeah. The big difference this winter is going to be going inside, and that's a whole new dynamic than the outdoors. So we're not going to have locker rooms. We're not going to have officials' rooms. We're anticipating, like for a basketball game, for example, teams walking in, going to their bench, warming up, short halftime. They'll have more like an AAU or a summer look to it. I know that the kids want to play, and the kids will do what it takes, and coaches will do what it takes, and it might not be exactly the way they want it to happen, but they saw it work in the fall, and they saw our teams win championships, and they saw good experiences by our kids, and they want to practice, they want to play, they want to finish their season. So I'm confident that any sport that we have, that we'll do whatever it takes.
Great story, Kyle, man. Thanks for taking the time tonight. We'll talk to the captains and other athletes you want to as we talk later on in the week.
Sounds great. If I could just send our condolences to Larry McIntyre's family. He's meant quite a bit to our league, and we're really going to miss him as a person and all that he has done for the city of Salem and for the basketball region and the state of Massachusetts. So I just want to put that out there.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about, we're going to talk with some of his colleagues in a little while. Yeah, great guy. All right, Kyle, thanks. We'll talk to you later. Stay safe.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That's Kyle Hodson, who is the Director of Athletics at Newburyport High School. We got a break coming up, and we're going to check in with Masconomets Cross Country Boys Captain, who set a brand new record here recently. He's also the Moynihan Student Athlete of the Month on the male side. So please stay with us. This is North Shore Sports Night. We'll be back. Very happy now to be joined by the October Moynihan Student Athlete of the Month on the male side, Sebastian Gilligan, who was no stranger to the Moynihan Award. Seb, welcome to MSO New Sports.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, second time you've won this award. Cross country at Masconomet, very, very competitive league, the Cape Ann League, but also very difficult conditions. And Seb, I wonder if maybe you could give us a little contrast, if you would, or comparison as to how this season has developed for you as captain of the team at Masco versus what you had, say, last year, because things are so different now. You didn't get to do spring track, and tell me a little bit about how it's so. No, wait a minute. Let me go back one. Were you at Danvers at that rally a couple of months ago?
Yeah, I was. Pretty much our whole team was there.
I think
we were really excited to try and get sports to happen this year, and we were very fortunate that it did.
I'm pretty sure I talked to you that day, but with the masks on, I wasn't sure. That's right. Now tell me, you know what, looking back on that, I think Danvers High School sort of the Danvers athletes sort of try to initiate that. But you had a big contingent from Masco, and the cross-country team was really well represented. Tell me a little bit what that meant as a captain, one of the captains, for you and your team to go there that day, and a little bit about what that experience was like looking back on it.
Honestly, it was inspirational to know that everyone on the team cares so much about making sure this season happened. I wasn't sure that, you know, people were going to be as enthusiastic as they were, and they definitely surprised me and encouraged me. You know, this whole season I've been looking back at that day, that rally, and just to know that my team cares so much about being able to actually compete in practice this year, meant a lot to me, and it was a big motivational aspect of this year.
What's some of the reaction that you've gotten among not only your teammates and classmates, but maybe also a little bit more about from adults, either teachers or coaches or just people in the community? Because, you know, looking back on that, we were talking about that with the Salem News guys about, these kids just want to play. And that it's not a demonstration, it was a rally. It was such a great turnout. But did you have positive feedback from others beside teammates?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a sports rally, but I think it was a community rally at the same time. I got a lot of feedback from coaches and people who don't even play sports, and they all just seemed very positive about it, because these are, you know, unprecedented times, and, you know, safety is obviously the number one priority, but we're also passionate about sports, and I think people from outside of the sports community recognize that and saw how much we care about our sport and making sure we can do it safely. I just received positive feedback from that.
Excellent. Experience. Well, it was so well done, and everybody was so polite and so on, and you got a good turnout, and there was a lot of support as people were driving by, as I remember. Tell me a little bit about cross country. How did you first start in cross country? Because it seems to me, I'm a runner, but not ever having done cross country, it seems to be a solitary sport. But explain to me how you got involved in it.
Well, my parents are both runners, and I had been running, you know, my whole life, just here and there, but I knew that it was always something I wanted to do, to join the cross-country team and, you know, see what I could do. I never expected, you know, any success in it, but I knew that I was going to enjoy it just because I like running. And then I found the team is, you know, they're my best friends. They're one of the best group of guys that I've ever known.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such an inclusive group, and everyone's a part of the team, and that's really what drew me to it, you know, to come back year after year, is the team, and then kind of the running is now secondary, even though that was what made me start.
What's your training like? Because, again, running is, it's meditative, I know, when you do long distance. You get a lot of thinking done, I presume, and you're probably doing a lot of guided imagery, but what's your regimen like in order to work up to be a senior captain this year? Because prior to this week or recently, you had the third fastest time in school history on the Bradley Palmer course, but you bested that. So what do you do to train to get in shape and to psych yourself up to do this?
Well, it really starts in June, basically. We have a phrase on the team that you can't win a championship over the summer, but you can certainly lose it. So we do hundreds and hundreds of miles over the summer to prepare, you know, working up all the way into August and then to September. And that's step one. And then basically it's, as we're competing, you know, keeping our fitness up, you know, focusing more on the speed aspect of it, so the endurance. And then now when we're getting to, you know, the final weeks of the season here, we're really focusing on getting our speed up, and, you know, we can have that finishing kick because we've already done the work over the summer, basically. So now it's just time to tune up and then mentally prepare for these big races.
You sound like a finely tuned machine, man. I love it. Okay, tell me about breaking the course record at Masconomen High School by 7 seconds.
Yeah, that was good. That's a memorable day for me. I think I'm going to, you know, hold on to that memory for a long time. It just, ever since, you know, probably end of freshman year, I've just been looking up that board and, you know, seeing the times, you know, 15:55 is the time to beat. And just been like, if I ever even get up on the, you know, the top 10 list, that'll be crazy for me. So just to actually do that, that feeling after crossing the finish line was crazy. The whole race, I felt slow. I actually felt very slow. Like I wasn't going to beat it. I kept telling myself that I wasn't going to beat it. And so that kind of pushed me to, you know, run as fast as I could. So I felt like I was running slow. So I think that's what, you know, led me to do it. But I think the other thing is I got trust in my training. I've, you know, ran all over the summer and leading up to that race. So the work was already done. I just had to get in the mental headspace to do it.
When you look up at the board now, your name's going to be up there among the greatest runners at Masco. Are there teammates, coaches, others that have helped you along the way that assist you in becoming the best? Because I know it's, a solitary sport, but it's a team sport also.
Yeah. My coaches, you know, Pat Mahoney, the head coach, my whole running career, he's been there to, you know, help me get to where I am right now. But the team too, that's my biggest inspiration, I think, that, cause we're all, everyone buys into it, into the program, and everyone cares. So the least I can do for them is try as hard as I can, cause I know they're trying as hard as they can for me. And that's really what I think about when it gets tough, that, you know, you're out there with the guys, and you're doing it for them, not just yourself.
Cool. What's the objective? What's left now for the fall season?
Well, we got one more meet on Saturday. It's the MSTCA Cup, which there's obviously no state meet this year. So this is an invitational like they've been doing before, where it's, you know, waves of round 12, and you're in pods, and it's all, the timing is spaced out very precisely, and it's a good course down in Attleboro, Mass. So that should be good. We got a couple guys going, and they will score it like a team race, like a state meet would be. So I'm very excited about that.
Excellent. The student the Moynihan Student Athlete Award is for students athletes, and if I look at your academics, they're off the charts here. They just really jump out at us, and honors just courses all over the place, and AP courses and so on. But the other thing I want to ask about, Seb, before we maybe talk a little bit about the future, is part of the National Honor Society is you have to do some community outreach and so on. And one of the things I noticed on your resume here is something called a Pen Pal program with Lawrence. Can you tell me a little bit about what that is?
Oh, yeah, that was sophomore year. Our school set up a Pen Pal program with the Lawrence Elementary Schools. And we got to send letters back and forth for a few months, with some, I think it's from second graders in Lawrence. And then we actually got to go to the school and, you know, meet the kids and talk to them for an afternoon. That was a really great experience.
Way cool. Well, you know, I'm looking at your grades, and, you're excelling in everything. Do you have a favorite?
Right now I'd probably say physics. Chemistry was my favorite last year, and I think this year it's physics.
We're talking AP physics here, ladies and gentlemen, which is being a math teacher. I really see that, but I got to tell you, Seb. See, the thing is, you can do math without physics, but you can't do physics without math, and you're strong in both of those, so that's way cool. What are you looking at now for next year?
Definitely a 4-year college. I haven't applied yet. I'm waiting for the regular decision deadline, but I've got a couple schools lined up, and then for running, basically where I get accepted, maybe I can and walk on or something like that with a school.
Well, just keeping it close to the vest, and I respect that. I'm guessing there are schools reaching out to you, but do you have any idea what you might want to study in school and maybe pursue as a career?
I'm thinking engineering. I'm not exactly sure what kind of engineering yet. I'm definitely interested in making stuff and, you know, working on problem solving. So I think that falls into the realm of engineering, and I love science too. So that it's all part of it.
Final question, I think, Seb, or comment. I want you to make a comment on what it means to be the Masco senior who has excelled pretty much above everybody else, considering the kids who are looking up to you now. You go back to your freshman year 4 years ago, and it looked so far down the road, and here you are. You're going to blink your eyes, and it's going to be June and graduating. So what does all that mean to you in terms of working with other kids and how they should look at Masco's cross country?
I just think back to, you know, my freshman year, you know, getting ready for – I have a distinct memory of, you know, right before my first ever cross country meet and having, you know, one of the juniors who then was going to be a senior captain the next year talk to me, and I just felt so included in the team, and that's what I want to give the rest of the team too, the young guys on the team right now. I think we've got a great future after I'm gone, and I definitely want to just be part of making sure those kids, you know, respect, you know, and get ready for, you know, the future and understand, you know, to appreciate everything as they go on and, you know, buy into the program and have fun at the same time. That's important to me, to make sure that the future of our program is feels as welcomed as I did when I was a freshman.
That sounds great. Well, listen, I hope we can talk again during indoor track, and let's hope that this virus gets under control. But in the meantime, Seb, congratulations on a fabulous beginning to your senior year and all that you have accomplished, and most especially for being the Moynihan Student Athlete of the Month for October.
Thank you so much.
And that was Sebastian Gilligan, who is the captain of the boys' cross-country team at Masconomet High School, setting all kinds of records over at Masco. All right, we're joined now by Gary Larrabee, sports writer, golf historian, and let me get that right, golf writer and sports historian. Gary, welcome back. I guess the two things that are dominating, three things dominating the sports headlines right now are, of course, the passing of North Shore's Larry McIntyre, who was such a legend here from Salem outward. Also the passing of Tommy Heinsohn, a legend in New England, and the Masters tournament. So I don't know where you'd like to start.
I think we have to start with the golf. It was most impressive, and another not very dramatic, Tim or Rick, but we had records set, of course, with Dustin Johnson going to 20 under par, a new record score for the Masters. And I believe he had only four bogeys, which is also a record for 72 holes at the Masters. And we had one fellow, a fellow from Korea, Cameron Smith from Australia,
right,
finished tied for second, became the first player in Masters history to shoot under 70 in all four rounds. So quite a historic Masters, to say the least. And of course, we're all waiting for Tiger Woods doing another major, to have Rory McIlroy become a member of that exclusive Grand Slam Majors Club, or maybe see Bryson DeChambeau tear apart Augusta National like he did somewhat at Wingfoot to win the U.S. Open. But nope, it was Dustin Johnson in a very historic performance, Tim.
Yeah, you know, as I watch the final round, I'm thinking, I have not heard Bryson's name throughout the entire day. And I looked him up this morning, and he finished tied for 34th at 286, and Tiger was tied for 38th at 287. He only had one sub-70 round. That was the opening day that I think got everybody's heart aflutter, but then sort of sank back to mediocrity with a 71, 72, 76, which was I think he'd just given up at that point. But I was really surprised, because everybody talked so much about DeChambeau, the way he had bulked up, and was he going to be too powerful for Augusta? Was he going to basically tear it apart, you know, just outdriving everybody? And, just didn't serve it up. I think a lot of people had. I think he was your choice to win. If my memory serves me correct, going back 2 weeks, because then again, I have trouble going back 2 days. I turned it on, and even on Saturday, you know, there's Dustin Johnson right up the top and I'm thinking, okay, you know, if he gets a couple of shots in front, he's just going to lay the wood to these guys. And he wants him out there, Gary. And the thing that I know most about him, he doesn't get ruffled. He's the same demeanor every single shot, every single hole, from the beginning of the tournament to the end of the tournament.
He is obviously, in my estimation, an underachiever. This is only his second major championship to go with the U.S. Open, but he's relaxed, he's calm. He did have a few failures when he was in a position to win a major, but the mere fact that he did it in such convincing fashion yesterday, you know, Dustin Johnson has certainly arrived as one of the all-time, well, maybe not all-time, but he's won 24 tour events, two majors, and who knows how many more he might win. In defense of DeChambeau, Tim, if you were not aware, he has been under the weather virtually all week, and he's had some not vertigo like Jason Day had a few years ago. But he's had some dizziness and a lousy stomach, and he wasn't afraid to share that. He wasn't trying to make an excuse. He's legitimately under the weather for an odd number of reasons, and he seemed very concerned when he was interviewed yesterday on CBS. We'll have to see and hope there's nothing serious. He doesn't think it's COVID, but gotta worry about what's going on with Bryson DeChambeau right now as we take a little bit of a break from the PGA Tour and the World Golf Tour and look ahead to the next Masters next April.
It's coming up.
You know, one of the guys that caught my eye yesterday, even though it kind of fell apart in the fourth round, was Abraham Ancer. And he finished tied for 13th, but he had three good opening rounds, and then he fell to a 76 that really took him out of the running. He had one stretch where he had 5 out of 6 bogeys in the middle of the final round that really took him out of the running. But he looks like somebody that could be a player in the years to come.
It's as well as Mr. M, who tied for second with Cameron Smith at 15 under. This fellow M has a fantastic swing, nice, deliberate. Looks like he'll be around for a long time. He's only 22 years old, but it was very unusual, guys, that we had some more or less unknown names at the top of the leaderboard or the close to the top of the leaderboard throughout the 4 days. And because I'm talking about M, I'm talking about Smith, I'm talking about Fratelli, CT Pan. So we'll see how these guys progress with their careers. But how about that nice first place prize money, guys? Cool, $2,070,000 for Dustin Johnson.
What was the $70,000 for? Taxes?
Probably or fuel for his private jet, you know. Someone on CBS did a great job. I think it was, I can't think who it was, but someone mentioned the fact that Johnson's had some phenomenal golf this year because he won the TPC Boston tournament, the Northern Trust, back in August, shooting 30 under par.
Yeah.
And, of course, a few weeks ago, he was diagnosed with COVID-19. At least he got a positive test on a COVID-19. His symptoms were very minor, but he had to stay away for a couple of weeks. And he had no problem last week contending in Houston, and we should have known that was going to be a signal of what could happen this past weekend at Augusta. And Dustin Johnson continues now as the number one player in the world, a position that Tiger Woods has held for many years, but he ain't going to hold it ever again if he just keeps making tens like he made on the par 3 12th hole yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard about that one.
Unbelievable.
They're talking about it on Talk Sports in England, and they were trying to get people to call in with their stories of egregiously high scores that they managed in playing the game of golf. But I guess the thing that really caught my eye, Gary, toward the end of it, because, you know, he really didn't get a whole lot of camera time early on with Cameron Smith. Like you said, the first guy to ever shoot 4 sub-70 rounds. Very, you know, underspoken, very quiet. When he was interviewed afterwards, he said, "I didn't even realize I had done that." You know, so he was more conscious, he was more focused on just being in the moment on the golf course than anything that he might have been achieving.
Sure, despite the fact there was no real drama in the final round, even though Johnson started the day with a 4-shot lead and it got down to 2 shots in the front nine, he was still pretty much in control virtually all the way. But I was, Tiger hit 3 balls in the water on the 12th. You may remember Tom Weisskopf made a 13 there one year, and he hit 4 or 5 balls in the water. I must confess, guys, the one time I had a chance to play Augusta National back in 1978, I made one par on in the 18 holes I played the day after the tournament was over, and I made par, guys, on the 12th hole.
Okay.
Well, I get it all over Tiger on the 12th.
There you go.
And you had 3 balls in the water at Lakeview.
You beat Tiger. All right. Gary, I saw your feature on in the Salem News on Tommy Heinsohn, and I wonder if you might have a word about that article that we can refer people to, and I know you knew Larry McIntyre as well.
Right. Tommy was a piece of work, one of a kind. You know, the longest serving member of the Celtics family, even longer than Red Auerbach. But I compared Red to Tommy and the two men who have served Celtic Nation the longest. Tommy was great, but I enjoyed him the most, quite frankly, not so much on TV or as a player, but those 6 or 7 years he coached the team in the 70s, but I had a chance to cover the team for the Salem News, and we had a lot of laughs off the court. We had an awful lot of laughs watching him in action as well. No one could scream at the referees with more profanity than Tommy Heinsohn. And he was a very good coach. The fact that they could win both the championships they won on the road in the clinching games, Game 7 in Milwaukee in 74 and Game 6 in Phoenix in 76, tells you, you know you have a good coach if you can win games on the road. And the Celtics won 3 out of 4 games on the road against Milwaukee in 74, and they won the most pivotal game, number 6, in Phoenix. Right. Tommy was a great player coach, great for the game in every respect, great for the Celtics, of course, and he was a union man, too. He almost led a strike during the 1964 NBA All-Star game in Boston because the players were getting shortchanged in some areas, and Heinsohn led a threatened strike, which didn't happen, but he did it all from Jersey City, New Jersey, to Holy Cross, to Boston. And he'll always be our guy.
You know it. You know it. Well, Gary, anything else you want to mention?
No, you mentioned Larry McIntyre, who was really, Heinsohn was Mr. Celtic almost, Mr. Boston Celtic for 60-plus years. Larry McIntyre was really, in a lot of ways, Mr. Basketball in Salem and on the North Shore because of his, first, he was a fine player at Salem High. And then, of course, he was an outstanding basketball official. Worked the Big East when the Big East was formed back in the 70s, like Archie Malace worked in the Big East, Archie Malace from Peabody. And Larry became, of course, commissioner of the Northeastern Conference for many years. He developed maybe 100 outstanding basketball officials over the years. He gave me a crack to work some basketball. Had a great time refereeing for 6 or 7 years and board 130. And Larry was just Mr. Basketball here on the North Shore. We're going to miss him terribly, but he's left a wonderful legacy, and we are so grateful, those of us in the basketball community, to have known him, served him, and we can't thank him enough.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you, Gary. All right, so we'll have something to talk about next Monday night, I presume.
I'm primed if you are.
Okay. We'll see you then, Gary. Thank you so much.
Stay well, guys.
Talk to you later.
See you, Gary. Take care.
Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer, and encyclopedic knowledge, of course, of everything here on the North Shore with respect to sports, but also with golf. All right, we're going to come back with the Daily Item sports editor here in just a second. You're listening to North Shore Sports Center. We're going to go a little long, and then we'll check in with Mike Grenier as well. So please stay with us. On this Monday, this is MSO News Sports, and you can get a hold of us at msonewsports@gmail.com.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Okay, we are back, and I'm really happy to bring on Mike Alonji, who is the sports editor at the Daily Item of Lynn and itemlive.com. Mike, welcome to MSO. How are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me, Rick. I appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you on. It's been way too long since you took over as sports editor at the Item. And right to the top of the list for me, Mike, comes what's happening with the public high schools in Lynn with respect to sports, because Lynn has been stuck in that red zone, and I know that classical and English in particular were not allowed to participate in the Northeastern Conference, and it's got to be brutal for the kids.
Yeah, it's tough, Rick. I mean, you know, hearing the stories from kids all over who, you know, luckily some of them have still been able to, you know, make commitments to colleges and things like that and been able to kind of play club sports and do some things, you know, outside of the school system. But, you know, really, you know, you talk to coaches, you talk to the players, and then they say, you know, we really miss competing for our teams, for our schools, you know, against the, you know, kids from the other Northeastern Conference schools. You know, obviously all these kids know each other. They hear that their friends are out playing and competing for their schools. And obviously, it really hurts them.
What is the reality of classical and English leaving or possibly leaving the NEC?
Well, the plan is for them to leave. They've been working on, you know, the athletic directors over there, Dick Newton in English, Billy Devon over at Classical. They've been working on this for a while. It started really over the past few years. The competitive balance is what they've really been kind of focusing on. You know, they've been really competitive, obviously, in several sports. Obviously, football, basketball, they compete really well. Baseball, they compete really well with a lot of other schools, but you know, a lot of the other sports, they fall by the wayside. And, they've just felt that they really, in terms of demographics, in terms of athletic, competition level, they feel like they really fit well with all of these, Greater Boston League schools, you know, Revere, Somerville, Chelsea. They just really found a fit. And, you know, the situation was kind of exacerbated by the pandemic, to be honest, because obviously, at the beginning of the year, all the Northeastern Conference schools, they took the vote. I believe the vote was 9-0-3, in terms of holding off on all sports until the fall sports two season. And that was the initial plan. Obviously, you know, school districts, you know, were able to come to their own decisions in terms of, school committees voting to allow their schools to play. And classical and English, to be frank, kind of got left out in the cold. You know, and that was made very clear to me by you know, all parties involved, that it's certainly not sour grapes or anything like that. This is, like I said, a move that's kind of been in the works for a while. But, you know, in the fall sports two season, classical and English have to make their schedules against these Greater Boston League schools anyway now, because the Northeastern Conference schools have all played. So they're kind of getting started a little earlier than they expected. But, you know, they feel pretty happy about it. Like I said, the fit is there for both schools.
I know a lot of coaches in the NEC thought that, you know, they wanted their own kids to play, and they did feel bad. They do feel bad that English and classical, the kids couldn't, because it's, you know, it sort of gives others a little bit of an unfair advantage of the, call them the elite athletes, if you will, you know, getting into colleges and so on. So it's good to know that
there's a situation, for sure.
Yeah, it's brutal. But it's good to know that there's a plan that, you know, we'll get things on a more even playing field for those schools. Great schools, great programs, great traditions. On the other hand, St. Mary's is having a pretty successful fall.
Yeah, they're doing well. It's good, like I said. It's you know, some schools obviously didn't get to compete. It is nice to see some schools that did get out there and compete. And you know, we've had a pretty good run of schools over at St. Mary's. Their field hockey team, first year as a varsity program, and you know, it was really exciting start to the year for them. They actually just finished up. They're playing in the CCL Cup right now, is a little makeshift tournament that the CCL managed to put together this year in lieu of any MIA tournaments. So they're having a little bit of competition back and forth. Field hockey team fell out last night, I believe. Finished up the season 3-5-3. You know, really successful. Really good to see mm-hmm. that they, you know, were able to get a field hockey program started. They were a club team last year, and to come out this year and, you know, be a field hockey, you know, a varsity program for the first time, and to really compete, you know, against some tough schools that, you know, they played against Austin Prep, they played against Bishop Feehan, and so that was pretty exciting for them.
Tim, have you met Michael Lungi, Tim?
No. Oh, well,
Tim, Mike, Tim.
Tim, nice to meet you.
I grew up in Westland back a couple of decades ago.
Yeah, okay.
when Red Hoffman was the sports editor at the item, and I went to grammar school with Steve Krause.
How about that?
Those are stories for another time. but the item has always been to me such a standout. Newspaper. I still check it every morning online for what's going on in town, and certainly the predecessors that have gone before you as the sports editor have always been an amazingly capable and well balanced group of individuals.
Yeah, and you know, and I've really been leaning on these guys a lot. You know, obviously, you know, a lot of these guys are still there. I speak to Paul Halloran a lot. I spoke to him this afternoon. I speak to Steve every day, obviously, in the newsroom. Ted Grant as our publisher. You know, I bounce ideas off of him. So it's been really incredible to you know, talk to these guys and see where they've been and what they've done and how to, you know, obviously I didn't grow up in this area. I'm from further up north. I lived in Haverhill, the Merrimack Valley area my whole life. So I didn't really know the ins and outs of the local sports scene here. And you know, obviously as an editor, those are the relationships that you need to have and you need to know. So, to be able to, you know, talk to these guys and find out who to call when I need to know about this sport or who do I call when I need to know this, it's really been huge for me as a first time editor.
It's amazing how much knowledge is in the minds of those guys you just mentioned collectively.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Oh my word, yeah. Listen, Mike, I want to do this more often, and we got one more interview we got to get to, but what's coming up in the sports section of the item this week, maybe in terms of features or coverage?
Well, we're closing out the CCL Cup. The fall season is coming to a close, so for the Catholic Central League schools, Fenwick and St. Mary's, they're finishing things up. The soccer teams went at it today, the girls' soccer teams. Fenwick pulled out the win. St. Mary's boys fell. Fenwick boys play tomorrow, so it's pretty exciting there. Around the rest of the Northeastern Conference, schools are just trying to, you know, fit in these last few games here. The season officially ends on, I believe, Saturday. So they're trying to get a last few in. Swampscott's got a couple more games left. Marblehead's got a couple more games left. So we're trying to get as much game coverage in as we can before we go into this uncertain period before the winter season.
Sounds great, Mike. I look forward to talking about winter sports with you pretty soon here. So thanks for joining us tonight, man. I really appreciate it.
Rick, Tim, I appreciate the time.
Take care. Be safe.
Thanks.
All right. That's Mike Alonji, who is the sports editor of the Daily Item and itemlive.com. We're going to go a little long, and I'm going to take a very quick break here and bring in Mike Grenier. Next, you are listening to MSO New Sports, and if I can find the right button to push, we'll be back. Here we go.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure. measure up.
All right, final segment now. We bring on sports journalist Mike Grenier. And, Mike, welcome to MSO. Man, just some strange times going on right now.
Yeah, on the one hand, you know, you hope that high school kids can get back to sports and all that with the, despite the COVID numbers spiking. You know, I wish the best for all our high school kids throughout the North Shore. On the other hand, you know, we've lost some great people the last week or so. Tommy Heinsohn, who I personally knew for like 48 years, passed away last week, and that was a tough one. I mean, I go way back with him. He could not have been any more accommodating and a better person to a journalist than he was to myself and Gary Larrabee during those years when he coached. And a little story, when I was a very young reporter, guys, I did a book on the Celtics, Don't They Ever Stop Running, when I was 24 years old. And Tommy Heinsohn is the one who suggested the title, because that was his offensive philosophy with the Celtics, and he coached Dave Cowens and that whole group. And after they won the championship in 1974 in Game 7 in Milwaukee, I was in the locker room with Heinsohn, and they were celebrating, and Heinsohn took the box score that had just been handed to me, and he put, "To Mike, we never stopped running." So that is one, and I framed that box score, Tim and Rick, and to this day I still have it, and oddly enough, all the mimeograph ink that was on the box score faded.
Yep.
But Heinsohn wrote me the autograph in with a pen, so therefore that's still as prominent as it was in 1974, the ink writing. So it's an item that I've treasured for literally for 46 years now, and it's still framed and right here in my home. So, you know,
that's a
great. Dearly departed Tommy Heinsohn was a great, great character and a great person, and will be missed by the whole Celtics community. He was with the Celtics, as we know, 64 years.
That's a great story, and what surprised me, and you're continuing that surprise, is when Gary mentioned the laughs that he said that he had with Heinsohn after the games and stuff. And, you know, I never met him. I know he was in on Cape Ann a lot, and he was an artist up here in Cape Ann. With a gallery. And I know people who know him, but I didn't realize that, you know, he comes across as this big, giant, gruff man, and yet, it seems, he had a little bit of a softer side, or at least a human side to him.
No doubt. And, you know, we all know Jackie McMullen, who did some great work for the Boston Globe, and Jackie swears to this day that Tommy Heinsohn made her job easier because there weren't many female reporters covering pro sports in those days. And she came along, and Tommy Heinsohn kind of broke some barriers in the sense that he tried to make her feel comfortable in any athletic setting at the Boston Garden. And, you know, I know Jackie has a great fondness for Tommy Heinsohn as well. And, you know, Tommy Heinsohn didn't care if you were from the New York Times or the Boston Globe or the Salem News. I mean, he just treated everyone the same. And you're right, he had that gruff exterior, but he certainly had...
Certainly
have that soft side.
You mentioned Jackie McMullen, and just in parentheses here, we're going to have to feature her someday somehow because, she's unmatched. I don't care. She's one of the greats of all time, so at some point we have to talk about her.
Oh, yeah, no question. Definitely a great basketball analyst. You know, when you hear her talk, you know she's been around the game for many, many years. She knows her stuff.
Absolutely. Tim?
Mike, I gotta have you taking it. I didn't know this was afoot. We just got through talking to the sports editor at the item, and
yes,
Rick brought up that classical and English are looking to leave the NEC.
Is that right?
They are. They're on the way out. Yep.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Obviously, you know, I live in Lawrence, which is another red zone area, and I know those schools have difficulty at this during the pandemic here of. Finding games and finding opponents, and I don't know what the solution is for schools like that. I really don't know how they can navigate this very difficult field and the difficult times. So, you know, all I can say is I wish those schools well, including Lawrence High School here. Central Catholic, which is, of course, the private Catholic school, much like St. John's Prep, where I went to school, they just shut down in-person learning. They're going straight to online learning, and their soccer season, because there was a COVID case, a positive case from one of the kids, one of the JV soccer player, they shut down the entire soccer program for the rest of the season here. So things change every day. Tim, we've talked about this. it's an awful situation that continues to seem to get worse, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know, I mean, there's just such long members of the old Essex County League, and all the traditional rivalries along the North Shore, and they want to dump it for Chelsea, and no knock on Revere, but that doesn't seem to make any sense. Then you got to go into Boston. I mean, you talk about transportation costs and time frame.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things, though,
Friday night.
Tim, I think one of the things I heard was it's a matter of participation. I remember talking with Revere's AD and coaches over the years. When they left the GBL, they found it so much more difficult in the Northeastern Conference, and they went back to the GBL. And it's a question, and their big thing was, you know, we love our kids, we love our school, but the kids have so many other distractions, and many of them have to work. They can't play sports. And I don't know if that's similar in English and classical, but it seems to be a matter of participation in the other sports. Your big sports, you know, basketball and football, they're always competitive.
Right, and you're right. And some of them are, like, less glamorous or, you know, or less – I can see where there's a participatory problem. You're not going to get any gymnastics kids, you know, at Lynn Classical, Lynn English, or swimming kids because of the difficult access to
right.
Swimming pools or things of that nature, gymnasiums for certain sports, wrestling, whatever. It doesn't matter. Some of these other sports, Lynn kids and like Lawrence kids where I live here, it's the same problem.
Yeah.
And it's going to continue to be the same problem. So schools are trying to find a niche where they can fit in and be competitive and not travel as much like as Tim was alluding to, not travel as much as they need to make it work with some of these conferences.
Mike, I wanted to talk about the draft, but maybe we can leave that for next week because we are running long, and I apologize for that. But
no problem.
I know you want to talk about Larry. The memory I have, Larry McIntyre, I met him when I first started at WESX, and he was the most accommodating guy. I was at a basketball game, and he was helping me out with statistics and everything else. And he was working summer programs. He just an all around good guy.
No question, and I don't know, hopefully we can delve with this, because I knew him so well. I go back to literally the late 1970s with him. Institution in Salem, Mr. Basketball, somebody called him the Emperor of Basketball. You know, he was a Big East basketball official at the height of when the Big East was the best college basketball in the country, and he could have stayed in that spotlight. However, he had a young family, and he decided, like, let's leave that spotlight and go. I didn't want to dim the spotlight on his own family, you know. So he wanted to raise that young family. So he gave up the good money that was coming in as a Big East official to devote his time to his family. But in the process, he stayed in basketball by becoming he assigned the officials, as we all know, he assigned basketball officials on the North Shore. All those high school games, Rick, that you and I went to and him over the last 35, 40 years, Larry McIntyre's fingerprints were all over that. He assigned those officials. And he would assign the best officials to the biggest games. And he groomed officials to become great officials.
Yeah, and Paul Halloran's part of that group, too. Mike Lynch was under his umbrella at one time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, even Gary Larrabee had dabbled in some officiating.
Yes,
I think on the JV level or something. Larry, if you wanted to be an official, you had to see Larry because you would learn from him. And then if you cut the mustard, he saw to it that you saw the great games. We know Paul Halloran. He did the biggest games of all, the state championships, the state semifinals, all that stuff. And I used to talk to Paul. Sometimes I'd be covering a game, and Paul Halloran would come over to the press table and say hello, and we'd say, you know, this is a big game tonight, do it right, you know, that kind of thing. And he took the job seriously, Paul Halloran did.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
And he learned from the best, Larry McIntyre.
Tim, any final thoughts for Mike?
No, I'm just hoping that somehow we get a vaccine. You know, I'm just hoping for a vaccine so that we can get back to a sense of what the world used to be and the sports world was on the North Shore and throughout the country. I mean, I think people need it. I think young people need it. It supplements their formal education. You know, I think you guys probably feel the same way about that.
Yeah, well, Tim's
I definitely echo those sentiments, Mike. You know, we've undergone such fracture in this country on so many different levels, and in the last year to have it all complicated by the coronavirus, and you know, the shifting narratives that have taken place. There are still not enough Americans that want to take this seriously. And unfortunately, a lot of them are in positions of leadership and influence, and they're leading just a lot of people down the road to illness and death. And the sooner those people are gone from the pulpit, the better for the overall health of the country.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Tim. And I'm just hoping, you know, let's state it flat out. With the new presidency, we hope to have a more vigilant and sane program for getting America back to being a healthier country.
Well, as my wife would say, from your lips to God's ears. So there we go.
Yep.
All right, Mike, we'll do it again next Monday, and we'll have a little bit, we'll be under a better time constraint.
No problem. No, thank you so much for reaching out to me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that, too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care.
All right, Mike. Take care.
That is
you
Mike.
You too, Tim. You too.
Mike Grenier, sports journalist, and, you know, all-around good guy, too. I think that's going to do it. Tim, any final thoughts from your side of the bridge?
No, I think I made my sentiments known with that last statement.
You've made it known every week, Tim. That's fine.
Well, again, as long as the message is consistent, you know, keep your distance, wear your mask, you know, avoid people, you know, that you need to avoid, and have a safe holiday.
All right. You be safe, too. We'll talk next week, Tim.
I'll do that.
All right. Thank you, man. Talk to you later. Yep. Bye-bye. That's Tim Kearns, who is MSO sports analyst and our ambassador of goodwill, for sure. Whew. All right, that takes care of it. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Thank you to all of our guests. Appreciate it. We've run long. This is MSO News Sports. This has been North Shore Sports Night. On behalf of Tim Kearns, Bill Newell, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposka, I'm Rick Moore. Take care. Stay safe. Do the right thing. This is MSO News Sports.